ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text 31. Patnya patim prashya grihanupagatam.
Patnya patim prashya grihanupagatam.
Vilokya sanjata. Mano Mahotsava
Vilokya Sanjata Mano Mahotsava
Utasturarat Sahasasanasayat
Utasturarat Sahasasanasayat
Sakam Vritir Vridita Lochananana Patnya, the ladies, wives of Lord Sri Krishna. Patim, husband. Prashya, who was away from home. Griha Anupagatam, now returned home. Vilokya, thus seeing. Sanjata, having developed. Mana Maha Utsavaha, a sense of joyful ceremony within the mind. Utastu, got up. Arat, from a distance. Sahasa, all of a sudden. Asana, from the seats. Asayat, from the state of meditation. Sakam, along with. Vratai, the vow. Vridita, looking coyly. Lochana, eyes. Anana, with such faces. Translation. The queens of Lord Sri Krishna rejoiced within their minds to see their husband home after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats and meditations. As was socially customary, they covered their faces shyly and looked about coyly. Please repeat. The queens of Lord Sri Krishna,
the queen of Lord Sri Krishna
rejoiced within their minds, to see their husband home, after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats, and meditations, as was socially customary. They covered their faces shyly, and looked about coyly. Now we have a very long purport to this particular verse. It goes on for practically 2 pages. So we will stop, we will read something and stop and continue. Om Agina Atimihandasya Gina Gina Salakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Gina Tasmai Shri Rubai Namaha. So of course before we begin to speak on the Bhagavatam, we offer our obeisances with our voice and also with our heart to Srila Prabhupada, because we know that we have not got any realization of the subject matter that is being spoken of in the Bhagavatam. So how can we read something with confidence if we have no realization? Well, it's difficult. It's like if you don't realize it, then it remains a subject matter that's somewhat theoretical. So what we try to do as devotees is we try, or we should try, to link our consciousness with Srila Prabhupada, because he has realized the subject matter that he is giving the explanation, the commentary, the purport to. He has got realization of the subject matter, and therefore we have hope. Otherwise, it's quite intimidating to sit up here on the seat meant for the speaker of the Bhagavatam and feel in yourself that actually you feel quite empty of any visual, heart, meditational, profound experience of what this subject matter is speaking of. Yet still we continue. So here we're reading in the 11th chapter how Krishna has returned from Hastinapur to Dwarka. So of course, as we know, prior to this, what took place was the Battle of Kurukshetra. And during the Battle of Kurukshetra, Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And prior to the Battle of Kurukshetra, there was every attempt made by Krishna on behalf of the Pandavas to avoid this battle. So he came from Dwarka, which is his capital, where he resides with his 16,108 wives. Now first there one thinks, somebody has 16,108 wives. That's pretty inconceivable. And wonderfully enough, it is inconceivable for a human being, but it is not inconceivable for the Supreme. He can do anything. So this is what we have to open our eyes and our heart and our mind and our consciousness to when we hear the Bhagavatam. And we should know that naturally, organically, our mind and heart and consciousness is closed to this. And therefore an attempt, an effort has to be made to open up and try to take in what is being given. Because, why is that? I will explain. Because we tend to see everybody in relationship to ourselves. So we see someone and say, oh, he's taller than me, he's shorter than me, he's richer than me, he's smarter than me, he's less smart than me, she's cleverer than me, on and on and on and on. Relativizing everything to ourselves. So then when somebody says, you know, this person has 16,108 wives, we become flabbergasted, because I can't possibly do that, so how could he do it? Maybe this is not true. I was thinking as I was just saying this to you how this one devotee, he works in a hospital in Perth, has a job there. And one time there was one wealthy landowner, a big owner of land up in Western Australia. He was in the hospital, and this devotee is a little playful. So he said to the man, he said, you know, I have a friend. And he said, oh, you, he said, where do you come from? He said, India. He said, oh, that's interesting. He said, I have a friend in India. His name is Mr. Madhava. And the man said, oh, that's very nice. And he said, he also takes care of cows. You take care of cows, he takes care of cows too. And the man said, oh, that's very nice. And then he said, he has 900,000 cows. And the man called his son, who was in the room, and a calculator. And he started, because he was astonished, because he knew per acre how many cows per acre, how much land this man must have. And he was really amazed he had this many cows. He was raising this many cows. And then, as he was just getting over that astonishment, he said, oh, and Mr. Madhava's also, he's got a lot of wives. And the unsuspecting gentleman said, oh, how many wives do you have? And he said, he's got 16,000, over 16,000 wives. And the man just became totally... he's thought, this man must be pulling my leg. Because after he just calculated what the cows would need to graze, and now he's got 16,000 wives. So that man was calculating, and the humor of it was, he was calculating everything on, okay, I have 1 acre per whatever this, so 900,000, I'll get the computer calculator out and work that out. Now, 16,000 wives, that goes a little too far. So we were laughing at it, at the gentleman, but actually, we do this also a little bit more respectfully, but we also do the same thing. We calculate everything from this brain up here, and it's a limited machine, and it can't really expand unlimitedly. The numbers and numbers and numbers become, it starts to freeze. So here in our purport, Prabhupada says, as mentioned above, the Lord entered his home palaces occupied by 16,108 queens. So simultaneously he entered his 16,108 palaces. And each one of these queens, you should understand, is a completely different personality. Each one of those queens has family members. Each one of those queens has sons and daughters, and Krishna comes in. He interacts individually with all the queens, with all the children, with everybody. This means that the Lord at once expanded himself in as many plenary expansions as there were queens and palaces, and entered in each and every one of them simultaneously and separately. Now, the word here that's important is, it says here in the purport that the Lord at once expanded in as many plenary expansions. So what does the word plenary mean? It means complete, total, absolute. It's a word that if you have a plenary meeting, a meeting of some group on behalf of the government, it's the same thing as if the government was meeting. It's a very strong word. So Krishna entered in each of these palaces in a complete form. He didn't act the same in each one, otherwise he'd be incomplete. He's forced to act in a stereotyped way, as if there's many copies, like you get a copy machine and you put something in and you make many, many, many copies. But each copy comes out the same. But Krishna comes out each time different. Here is another manifestation of the feature of his internal potency, Krishna's spiritual energy. He can expand himself in as many forms of spiritual identity as he desires, even though he is one without a second. There's no one like him, no one competing with him. This is the definition of God. So whilst we're hearing the Leela, the pastimes of Krishna when he appears in this world, it's so important, and therefore Srila Prabhupada does it regularly. He puts back the philosophy for us because our mind starts thinking, I don't know if I can relate to this. And then we go back and we understand, oh yes, he's God. That means that he created everything. Everything belongs to him by definition. It's not like we're insisting upon that in our own opinion. That's what the word means. That's what the position means. Everything is under his control. So if he can expand himself into so many forms, the good news for us is that he can likewise expand himself into a form suitable to reciprocate with each one of us simultaneously. And this is very reassuring, because it would be quite wonderful if we felt ourselves always to be in contact, in communion with him. Our life, our problems, our decisions, our worries, everything. We could work those things out by seeking his shelter, seeking his guidance, seeking his involvement in our lives. Or seeking our life to be involved in his plan, which is again a very important point. It is confirmed by the Shruti mantra that the Absolute is one alone. There's only one Supreme Godhead. And yet he becomes many as soon as he desires. He can be one or many according to his desire. These manifold expansions of the Supreme Lord are manifest as plenary or separated portions. So there's two types of expansions of the Lord. There's an expansion where he manifests the full power as he is again and again and again, many, many expansions. And the other form is when he manifests himself as separated living beings. That means ourselves. We are also an expansion of the Lord, each one of us. Why don't we feel like that? Why do we feel not connected? Does anyone know?
Yeah.
Yes. Why?
Because of the three modes of giving energy.
Because of the three modes, what do you mean by that? Can you give some elaboration on that?
We are pure spiritual soul, but because of the three modes of intervention, we are covered, controlled by the three modes. Therefore, we cannot serve him all the time, can't think of him all the time.
And what is the three modes of material nature?
Mode of goodness, mode of depression, mode of ignorance.
What are they? I mean, that's a word, you know. What are they?
They are the...
How can I recognize
them? External energy of
Krishna. Yes, they're Krishna's energy. So Krishna has three types of energy. He has pure spiritual energy. And when he comes here, he acts in conjunction with his pure spiritual energy. He has another kind of energy which is called tatastha. And tatastha means this way or that way. It can go like this. And a good example of tatastha is when you go to the beach, just down here, you go to the beach. If you go at low tide, you'll see the water is way, way back and there's so much sand. If you come at high tide, you'll see that there's so much water and you can't see the sand. So at high tide, that area of the beach becomes water. It's water covered, it becomes the ocean. And at low tide, it's not water covered, it's not the ocean, it's the beach, it's the sand. So these three energies, one is the spiritual energy, which is full of what qualities? Yes, what are the three qualities? Yes. Eternality is a spiritual quality. It's not a material quality. We don't find anything eternal in this world. So eternality is the first one. The second one is full, complete knowledge of everything. Natural knowledge. Not you go to the university and you study and you get a big brain full of facts. But complete natural comprehension of how everything is. This is part of the spiritual energy. Very different than the modern intelligence that people are cultivating, because this is mechanical. It's a machinery up here in our head, and we work very hard and we get so much knowledge and we become get some good credit for that. But that's not the kind of function that the spiritual energy has. The spiritual energy means you know everything already. You don't have to study anything. That's the spiritual energy. And the other feature of the spiritual energy is bliss. It's completely full of the most fullest kind of joy that you can imagine. We can't imagine. And that joy is not like a boring type of happiness where, you know, many times if you read from modern psychologists and so forth, they feel that without unhappiness, how will I know what happiness is? It's a general material concept. And there in the spiritual world, there is unhappiness. But it's not like here, because that unhappiness is another flame of blissfulness. And it's completely varied, always changing, always moving, always shifting. So fascinatingly so, that nobody in the eternal spiritual energy gets bored. Now there's a big one. Imagine not getting bored, not thinking, okay, I've done enough of this now, okay, I've eaten enough of that now, okay, I've had enough of that now. And nobody here grows old because there is no influence of time. So over here, this is Krishna's spiritual energy. It's exquisite and transcendental. Then there's this tattasta in the middle going backwards and forwards, and on this side is another energy. This is Krishna's external energy or his material energy. And his material energy also has characteristics. And the first characteristics it has is the exact opposite of the spiritual energy. So it is not full of knowledge. We are not full of knowledge. When we die, all our learning and everything goes with us. And if we take another birth, which is very likely, then we have to grow up again in another body, and we have to have another schooling, and we have to take on from there. So we're revolving in a cycle of birth and death over here. And because it keeps going round and round and round and round, you can never really actually be happy here. Just like I notice, I'm sitting here today and my leg is aching. And I'm trying to talk, and all the time my mind is going, oh, my leg is aching. And then it starts thinking, I wonder if it'll be aching tomorrow. And I wonder if that means that I'm getting arthritis. And I wonder if it's just going on and on in the background, because this is the material world. And as Srila Prabhupada explains, there's always fear here, because fear is like, what if this problem happened? Or what if that problem happened? And maybe this could happen, and if that happens, what if that would happen? And this is what the mind is busy doing when it's in contact with the material energy. And the material energy, it's always promising a solution. If you just get this, if you just get that, you'll be peaceful, you'll be happy. But as soon as we get to our goal, there's another thing, and another thing, and another thing. So this is the material energy. And then we mention these modes, the mode of goodness. It's like a rope that runs, or like a thread that runs through this material energy. And goodness makes us feel very peaceful, very still, very shanti, makes us feel like actually it's quite nice in the material world, because there's some happiness with the mode of goodness. But it's always changing, like these waves in the middle. It's going up and down between goodness, which is stillness, and then it goes to passion, which is intense energy coming. I've got to get this done, I've got to get that done now, I've got to get this, and so on and so forth. And therefore we say, when you go to the city, you watch people moving very quickly under the influence of passion. And then when you go to some unpleasant place, heaven forbid, where people are drinking and acting in very low ways, in dangerous ways, not civilized ways, but they are enjoying themselves in this way. This is the influence of ignorance. And these modes are going like this, like this, like this all the time. So you cannot be still, just like if you get in a boat and you say, I'm going to live in this boat peacefully on the ocean. You cannot. Everybody knows. You can just go down here and you see the boats and they go up and down, up and down, up and down. So this is our experience. So with our mind, which is all we have, and our intelligence, which is all we have to function with, when we hear these things, we immediately put them over here, but they're actually over here. So what we're being asked to do is to try, almost like, it's a little difficult, but to suspend our rational processes for a little while and just hear a little bit. But every now and again, or all the time, our mind will be saying, oh, I don't think I can do this. And then we have to go through the philosophy again. Okay, you can't do it. You don't believe this. You don't believe this. Okay, who is God? What is God? By definition, what is God? God is unlimited. He must be unlimited. He's not God otherwise. So he's not conceivable by you. You can't understand him, or he's limited. You put your intelligence on top and you scoped him out. So he's limited. Anything that you can understand is limited. You're above it. Now, he's above you, so you can't shine your intelligence up and understand him. And he's everywhere, everything, he says. This is all my energy. That's my energy, this is my energy, and this is my energy. And separated parts means these tiny, minute, infinitesimally small jivas, souls, they're part of the Lord, and they're also separate from the Lord simultaneously. They have freedom and independence, but they're completely still part of him. And that's us. And then over here, we have this dull matter, which is what we're wearing. I was noticing, I was driving, coming back from somewhere yesterday, and I saw these cars on the road, and I was thinking, oh yes, a car is kind of like, for the soul, for the person who's driving the car is kind of like a covering, right? Like you get in there and it kind of covers you completely, and you drive it, and then you park it, and you get out. But here we are, we've got one of these, and this is also considered a yantra, or like a car, but we don't get to park it and come out. That's what I was thinking. And then I thought, but actually at night, if you had all these bodies lying down next to each other sleeping and snoring, they went out. They go out in the subtle body, and they go here, there, and when it comes time for morning, we come back in, and we don't notice. So Srila Prabhupada said, at night, you forget your gross body. You forget this body, just like the man parks the car, forgets the car, and goes into his house. So we forget the gross body at night. And in the day, we forget the subtle body. And we identify again with the gross body. Here I am, I'm an Australian, I'm such and such an age. I'm hungry, I'm not hungry, I'm happy, I'm sad, and on and on and on. We identify with the gross body. But at night, we park it. So this is interesting because we and our bodies are separate, whereas these personalities who are plenary expansions of the Lord, they are eternal, and their pastimes, their activities are eternal, and they don't suffer from death and decay. And if, like in the Bhagavatam, we read how birth is there and death is there, we should have enough scientific, spiritual understanding to understand that this is called a lila or a pastime, and it is not birth and death as we know it. But Krishna is acting like a human being so that we can become attracted to him. So therefore, he shows all the signs of being like a human being. But when Mr. Madhava has 16,108 wives, he doesn't have all the impossible inconveniences that they would have. So there. So, these manifold expansions of the Supreme Lord are manifest as plenary or separated portions. The separated portions are representations of his energy. So we heard one energy, two energies, three energies. So separate portions are here, and plenary portions are here. The plenary portions are manifestations of his personality. He is so unlimited. He has a different plenary portion, that means a different personality, made up of the same elements to interact with every jiva soul. And that's why it said his qualities are unlimited. So if I'm thinking about Krishna, you could say my Krishna, who I would like to serve, may be very different from your Krishna or somebody else's Krishna. And somebody likes to hear about Krishna in Dwarka, where everybody knows how great he is and they all go like this. And somebody else likes to hear about Krishna when he's in Vrindavan, where everybody forgets about how great he is. Hari Vasan. So these so-called different Krishnas, they're the same Krishna, but he can expand unlimitedly. Thus, the personality of Godhead manifests himself in 16,108 plenary expansions and simultaneously entered into each and every one of the palaces of the queens. This is called vibhav, or transcendental potency of the Lord. These expansions are given that technical Sanskrit term. And because he can do so, he is also known as Yogeshwar. Yoga Ishwar. He's the master of yoga. Because, why? Because yogis can also expand and they can appear in all sorts of different places at the same time. But they have a limited amount of times they can expand, and they can't expand into individual, totally individually separated forms. A yogi can expand himself at utmost to 10 expansions of his body, but the Lord can do so to the extent of as many thousands or infinity as he likes. Now, does anyone have any questions so far? Because since this is such a long purport, I don't want to put you to sleep. Yes, Prabhu.
When we understand that we are qualitatively one with the Lord.
Yes.
But we also understand that we don't have all the qualities that the Lord has.
We don't have all the qualities that the Lord has.
How do we reconcile these two? That we are qualitatively one, but we don't have all the qualities that the Lord has.
That's how it is. What's your problem with it? Out of 64, you have 50. Are you satisfied? Some qualities only he has. Nobody else has those qualities. That's why he is God. But a large amount of them we have. But we are a different energy. We're not him. We're a different energy. We're one of his energies. Only when he chooses, he expands himself perfectly as himself to interact with his energies. But we are one of his energies. We're not him. There's he and his energies, like the sun and the sunlight. So the sun has many of the characteristics of the sunlight, have the same there, heat, light, and so forth. But volume and intensity and some characteristics of the sun, form and shape of big planet, are not present in the sunlight. So that's just how it is. Does that satisfy? Yeah, I think so. We can't have everything, because otherwise we would be he, and we're not. Yes. Copy machine.
When we copy what
he
copies,
his plenary portions are the same as him, but they act independently. So it's like the copy machine example is good for saying, you know, you just make more and more copies of the same. But it's as if each one of those copies has a total life, an animated life of its own independently. Do you follow?
Yes,
they don't all.
Yes.
Yeah.
When Lord is entering into 108 wives,
yes.
At the same time.
Yes.
So that's the reason why he's expanding the divine portion.
Yes, and then.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. But he can act totally differently. For example, in one place he may go in and do some action is different, and his qualities can be slightly different, but they're the same. That's hard for us to understand. We want one or the other. Okay, you say, you know, his qualities are different, then his qualities are different. And then you say his qualities are the same and they're different. That's confusing. That can't be. Because here in this world, on this plane that we know in the material world, if something's the same, it's the same. If it's different, it's different. But there, the function of eternality, full knowledge and blissfulness works very differently than the material world. If you can understand. And that's why we always add that to our philosophy the word inconceivable. It's very important to understand that. Yes.
Yes. Expanding as himself 16,108 times.
Yes.
But he's the same personality.
Yes.
Now, how do we understand these expansions different from Lord Kapila, Tulsi Maharaj, and Vishwadev? How are they different in terms of quality?
Well, if you put him as the master, the supreme Godhead, then if he wants to, say, expand in some particular form to do a particular thing, he can do that. That's a partial expansion. That's a shaktavish. It's a manifestation of his power. But they're also eternal. But they're not a full manifestation of everything. They have a particular function. They come into this world. There's countless, countless, countless incarnations like that. Like the waves of the ocean are countless, There's countless incarnations of the Lord coming and going like that. So one book, Srila Rupa Goswami, called Laghu Bhagavatamrita, he gives a Sanskrit term for each of these different types of incarnations and ways that the Lord appears in the material world. And there's so many different sorts. But this particular one here, the Vaibhav one, that one is a direct expansion of the Lord with all the Lord's qualities present. That particular type of incarnation. When Krishna appeared in Dwarka, he was fully present with each one of his queens. When he appears as Kapila Devi, it's for a particular function and purpose.
But it's him.
It's him, but it's him, not fully him. We're him, but we're not fully him. If we think we're not him, we're not the same as him, then we think we're independent. And if we think we are the same as him and we are him, and there's no difference, then we also have a misconception. And most philosophies go this way or that way, because they're usually coming from the brain. So the brain will say, okay, we can be the same or we can be different. We can't be the same and different at the same time. So one philosopher will say like this, the next one will say like that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is no different than him, who is him, he says, no, the proper solution is these two things exist simultaneously, and now you have an understanding of everything, if you can put these two things together. Simultaneously different and non-different from him. And it's inconceivable, achintya, because we can't understand it. Yes. They're different kinds of they're different categories. You can look it all up. It's technical. It's not in one sense it's not very relevant to our day by day life. It's just a technicality. But you can look it up, it's all there. All this information is there. Yes. Over here. Yes. Yes, to some degree. You see, we're in the middle, right? The water comes and the sand and the water, sand, water and sand. Another good example of the tatastha is like a vine. I don't know if any of the trees out here have vines growing on them, but a vine grows up and up and up a tree. It has to have a tree to cling to. So the jiva, they have to have some energy to cling to. So we either cling materially or we cling spiritually. If we cling to Krishna and we're in the material world, we're with Krishna. If we cling to the material energy, we cling there for our shelter and our support, then we too are influenced and controlled by the material energy. It's fairly simple. It's difficult to actually apply yourself all the time to take shelter of Krishna, but the situation is fairly simple. You either go this way or you go that way. And our problem is we go or we go flip right over to the material. So the application is difficult, but the principles are very simple. Yes. If we're too strongly influenced by the modes of material nature, then we're involved in reoccurring birth and death automatically. These are the characteristics of the material energy. So if we're involved in reoccurring birth and death, then how can we be ourselves? You see, we can only be ourselves if we try to take shelter of Krishna and understand our relationship with him. Does that make sense? Because our self that we think we are, it keeps changing. And you say, I'm Indian, I'm Australian, I'm this, I'm that, and it changes. I'm a young man, I'm an old man. It's always changing. Yes, from?
Okay, when we give the example of wine, so we take shelter of Krishna.
Yes. We can grow up and up, yes. If we take shelter of Krishna, we can grow up and up and up and up. But in a sense, we'll always feel that we're dependent, because the vine is depending on the tree. Right? If the vine suddenly says, what's this tree? I don't need a tree. I can stand by myself. Then the vine will go, whoop. So we must know that as we, because sometimes what happens is when we first become a devotee, we're feeling very, like it's quite difficult and it's a bit hopeless even, and we don't know what's next and how we're going. So we're feeling a little bit tentative. But then after X amount of years and some practice and experience, and now I know this thing and that thing and that thing and this thing, I start to feel that I'm pretty competent actually. I'm pretty solid now. And then we can lose that sense of tentativeness and in favor of thinking, you know, I'm quite clever. And that's that trying to stand independent. And then we sometimes wilt a bit. And then again we have to remember, no, I need the support. I need the support of Krishna. Krishna coming through the Bhagavatam. Krishna coming through his holy name. Krishna coming through the deity, mantra, murti, shastra. These are our strength and our support. If we step away from them, then we're in material energy. That's where we were to begin with. Does that become clear? Do you have any more question on that? Okay. Any more? Okay. So I will just go to a certain point and then I will stop so that we can continue. Unbelievers become astonished to learn that Krishna married more than 16,000 queens because they think that Krishna is like one of them, like Mr. in the gentleman in the hospital. And they measure the potency of the Lord by their own limited potency. We should know we do this all the time too. We're no exception to doing this, and that's why we get confused. If we could give that up, we would probably find Krishna consciousness would move a lot more quickly. But it's difficult too. It's just, you know, how it is. One should know, therefore, that the Lord is never on the level of the living being, who are but expansions of his marginal potency, the one in the middle, and one should never eulogize the potent and the potency. Never equalize the potent and the potency. Say they're the same. This is a modern time immemorial philosophy that God and everything is one, and that we are God, everyone is God, and so therefore ultimately we're thinking we're equal to God. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, if you ask somebody, if you push them to that point, they have to nullify any qualities in God to be able to say that they are equal to God. Because it's ridiculous, right? If you say, God is the creator of the universe and you're equal to him, what are you doing? So then, no, he's actually, that's just an old saying. He's actually everywhere in everything and we're all part of him. And if we just would break through this ego barrier, we would see that we are all God. This is a very common philosophy. The queens were also expansions of his internal potency, and thus the potent and the potencies are perpetually exchanging transcendental pleasures known as pastimes of the Lord. So here is a definition of a pastime of the Lord, is that it's the Lord exchanging loving exchanges with one of his potencies. And generally speaking, he exchanges with his own spiritual potencies, or those who are living within the spiritual realm. But he's inviting us, because even though we're Tathasta, if we take shelter of the spiritual realm, we can also enter into the spiritual realm. And we also can take part in those pastimes. And that's why he comes to the earthly plane, to show these pastimes, to entice us. Just like there's so many people have their advertisements along the side of the road and up on high on buildings. Why? Because they want to brainwash you that you'd like this thing and you'd like that thing. But we know that we probably wouldn't. In fact, we know, of course, that we definitely wouldn't. So in the same way, Krishna brings his whole entourage and he performs his activities. And those who are very, very fortunate are able to understand that this is spiritual. This is not just ordinary. This is not just like an Amachitrakata comic book or something very, very easy to read and throw away. This is actually Krishna's pastimes being enacted. And one who is extremely fortunate lives in that reality all the time. And in that sense, we read earlier in this chapter that there's no really such thing as the material energy for them. They don't see the material energy because the material energy is the blocked part. It's for those who don't want to go there, they go here, you have to go somewhere because you're in the middle. So those who are not in the middle over here, they don't see this as material. They just see this as the Lord's energies. They don't make that distinction in their service and in their experience. And that's being invited of us. We're being invited. It's the most extraordinary thing, actually, Krishna consciousness, because we're being offered this amazing opportunity. But because we may not understand it, we may not take it as deeply or as seriously or consider its value as for what it is. But this is actually the fact. Krishna is trying to call us home, and he's trying to ask us to get other people to come as well. One should not therefore become astonished to learn how the Lord married so many wives. On the contrary, one should affirm that even if the Lord marries 16,000 million wives, he is not completely manifesting his unlimited and inexhaustible potency. What is 16,000? It's just a very few. He married only 16,000 wives and entered into each and every one of the different palaces just to impress in the history of the human beings on the surface of the earth that the Lord is never equal to or less than any human being, however powerful he may be. No one, therefore, is either equal to or greater than the Lord. The Lord is always great in all respects. God is great is an eternal truth. So I'll stop here. And how are we going for time? If anyone has any questions, you can ask more. Yes, brother. Yes. 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 Oh, you're coming to a very interesting subject matter. You're coming to a very interesting point, I think. Maybe. Anyway, I'm going to present an interesting point and you can see if you're coming to it. That is that here we are, right? All of us stuck in a little car, a little vehicle, wandering through life, struggling with the ups and downs, you know, problems of health, problems of finances, problems of where to live, problems of mixed desires, problems of not being able to control the mind. We're a pretty sort of sad lot. Right? But, you know, it might get a bit better as we become. But actually, we too have these potencies. Every jiva has the potency to be able to expand as well. But not in the yogic sense, because the yogi expands within matter. But think about this, in every one of those 16,108 palaces, Vasudeva was there, Devaki was there, Narada Muni was there, if he wanted to be. There were so many people can also expand. And the interesting thing is, we also can do that. As souls, we also can do that. So how much we're missing out on, we have no idea. By accepting this body, which is, as Srila Prabhupada calls it, a rotting body, because if you die, you know, if someone dies, say somebody, heaven forbid, died right here before us, you would see instantly that the soul left that rotting body, the body starts to rot. It's only holding from rotting because you're living in it. And we are like this rotting body so much. We don't know, we're ignorant of what is actually our capacity. So one class, Srila Prabhupada said, the soul is almost as good as God. He has powers almost as good as God. That means he can expand, we can expand. Imagine if we were living in that consciousness. how different we would see everything. So Srila Prabhupada was living in that consciousness. And he's looking at us and he's looking at the world and he's saying things like that all these souls rotting or loitering in the material world. He's looking at this like they're looking up some great man, a president or somebody, and he's looking down at them for what they're missing out on that's theirs. Not what they could achieve if they worked very hard, but what is already theirs, and they've forgotten about it. So I think you were heading towards the big question, how come Narada Muni can? Yeah? That's what I was thinking also. Just imagine if we knew what we actually had. We would really take burst, we would rush our Krishna consciousness through. We would just do anything we could to actually accelerate our journey out of this conditioning of matter brought upon by our desire only, not Krishna's desire. We sometimes say, oh, Krishna did this to somebody, or Krishna punished somebody, or Krishna forced something. That's not Krishna. Krishna's busy playing in the spiritual world. That's Krishna's material energy doing all of that work. Krishna is just waiting for us to turn to him and he'll happily extricate us. Yes, Prabhupada.
Mother, you talked about mind. Mind goes on different sides. Self-profit can get into it.
Yes.
Self-profit just
yes.
taking help.
Yes, yes.
And parasitic mind is the feeding, the plant feeding us, the mind. Is it going to be parasitic or self-profit?
What's the first one?
Parasitic
or?
Separately. Just taking help. Shelter to get food. So, and the other thing I wanted to know is.
Where the first one?
And,
we're parasitic. We're totally parasitic. Because everything that we have, all the nourishment that we're surviving on, it's all Krishna. We're never separate from him. But we don't understand it.
And once we take Gurupada Ashraya, then what
happens? We continue with our practices more seriously. We don't get a magic kind of a, like Ramakrishna. We get everything solved. No, we continue with our practices. And Krishna, he recognizes them in disciplic succession. And Srila Prabhupada's mercy is there, the Guru Parampara are there, but our work remains the same. We're not sort of waiting to be it's like we're parasites in the sense that we can't go beyond Krishna, and all the nourishment and everything that we're receiving is all coming from Krishna, because nothing is beyond Krishna. He's the absolute truth, he's the absolute whole. Right? Definition wise, he's the absolute whole, nothing. This is his energy. So we're totally dependent on him even when we're over here. But when we come here, we're both of those, because the other one you said was like a parasite that just sucks energy and goes that way. And the other one is rooted and just takes the help of the tree. We're sort of both. We also have work to do. We have work to do at the same time. We can't just say, oh Krishna, please make me a good devotee. Please make me this, please make me that. Please solve all my problems. Yes?
You took the example of visiting the car. Similarly, it's so
difficult. Yes, yes.
And in the night time, it leaves the spoiling. But still, it's not.
Yes.
So I understand that the experience is the function of the soul that we remember as the dream.
The soul is traveling then in the subtle body. The soul is the observer and experiencer.
Yeah.
Otherwise we couldn't sit in this class. We would be like dead if there was no soul present in our body. So the soul is the experiencer. And the soul analyzes its experiences through these subtle faculties. And the gross body is like the vehicle to get you from place to place and do indriyas, senses. I can use my hands, I can use my legs, I can use my various faculties of the body to do things. And I can reason and think through this subtle body. But the soul misidentifies that this is me, and I'm this. And therefore they're stuck. And in that state of mind, they can't go anywhere. Yes, they can go up and down the material world, but they can't go beyond the material, because to do that, you would have to be able to understand that I'm beyond this body and beyond this mind.
So there's a function of the mind that is the soul. The dream, what we think, is a function of the mind, not the soul.
Not the soul. The soul is the observer of the functions of the mind. Sometimes it's said that the soul gives over its power of attorney to the mind in favor of sort of becoming unconscious. The soul says, okay, here, you run the show. And so the mind acts as if it's the soul, but the soul is actually still the observer of the functions and actions of the mind and the body.
So we don't have to misunderstand that the picture of dream or something like that, because it's an illusion kind of thing. It's not really the design of the soul, because
the soul has one issue only. The soul has the opportunity: would you like to serve Krishna and take shelter of Krishna's spiritual energy, or would you like to take shelter of matter? That's the only thing that the soul is kind of like responsible for, in a sense. Because as soon as the soul makes that decision, I'd like to take shelter of matter, then matter carries out everything. And the soul has to experience the consequences. And you can never you can't find a place where you say, okay, this is where it all began, and if you hadn't done that, it would have all been different. Because every action that's taking place is hinged on an action before. My mother, my father, my auntie, my uncle, it goes back, my last life, my next life. It's all like a progression, like a dream. And if somehow or other we're awakened to the fact that I have this one vital choice, and we say, I want to serve Krishna, I want to take shelter of Krishna, at that moment that's the soul's choice. Do you understand? And that's what all the preaching, all the teaching, all the chanting is trying to get us to come to that point. That I say, I actually want to take shelter of Krishna. I now understand it. That actually this is never going to make me happy. I want this. I want to be a servant of Krishna. I'm a servant over here. I'm not satisfied with this. I want to serve here. All right, I think we should stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Bhava. Thank you.